Welcome to the Deep Dives. This is where we take the source materials you send us and, well, we really dig in.
Yeah.
We try to pull out the key stuff, you know, the interesting bits, and just help make sense of some really fascinating topics.
Absolutely.
And today, we're diving into some experiences that are just incredibly common. I mean, almost everyone has had these moments.
Right.
But when you actually stop and think about them, they're still kind of mysterious, aren't they? We're talking brain freeze.
Yeah.
That weird feeling of deja vu and the whole huge world of dream interpretation.
That's it. And we've got a really interesting mix of sources this time. Some articles from places like UT Southwestern, Johns Hopkins, psychology sites too, like Very Well Mind, Simply Psychology. Even some discussions from places like Reddit.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So the mission, as always, is to unpack all that, find the nuggets, and see what, you know, science and different cultures tell us about these odd little moments we all seem to share.
Okay, so settle in. Maybe grab a drink. Just be careful if it's icy. And let's get into why you get that sudden headache from ice cream, what's going on when you feel like you've been somewhere before, and, gosh, the incredible ways people find meaning in dreams. All right, let's start with brain freeze.
Yeah.
Pretty much universal, isn't it? That, like, sudden jolt of pain when you have something frozen, maybe too fast.
Oh, yeah.
Cold soda, ice cream, boom. Instant headache. Super common, and the sources say it happens a lot, especially with kids.
It does, and it actually has this amazing scientific name, sphenopalatine ganglioneuralgia.
Ooh, okay, say that again.
Huh. Sphenopalatine ganglioneuralgia. It's a mouthful. Thankfully, yeah, we mostly call it a cold stimulus headache or just, you know, ice cream headache.
Much easier.
And the good news, which all the sources stress, is even though it hurts like crazy for a second, it's really quick and it's totally harmless.
Okay, so why? What's actually happening in there when you get that feeling?
Well, the sources lay out the leading hypothesis. It's not like it's 100% proven down to the last detail, but the main idea involves your blood vessels reacting really fast.
Okay.
So when something really cold hits a sensitive spot, like the roof of your mouth, it makes the blood vessels there clamp down really quick. That's vasoconstriction.
Right, narrowing.
Exactly. But then almost immediately after, they open back up really wide. That's vasodilation.
Ah, so it's a quick back and forth.
A really quick, really dramatic change. And that rapid shift in size, the narrowing, then widening, is what activates pain receptors right there in the walls of those vessels.
Huh. So it's not the cold directly causing the pain, it's the reaction of the blood vessels, the speed of that change.
That seems to be the key, yeah. And then that pain signal from your palate travels up along sensory nerves. Specifically, the trigeminal nerve is mentioned. That's
yeah.
A big one for feeling in your head and face.
Okay.
And the headache you feel. It's actually referred pain.
Referred pain.
Yeah, meaning the pain is felt in your head, but the thing causing it is happening somewhere else on the roof of your mouth. Your brain basically gets the location wrong.
Wow, okay. Pain signals traveling from your mouth up to your head. That's wild. The sources also said something about migraines, like people who get migraines might get brain freeze more often.
They did mention that connection, yeah. Although they're careful to point out the pain itself is different. Brain freeze is usually described as, like, sharper, more intense, but much shorter than a typical migraine.
Right. And how short are we talking?
Thankfully, very short. One source mentioned a study finding that for 98% of people, it's over in less than 5 minutes.
Which is probably why painkillers aren't much use, right? The sources said that it's gone before the meds could even kick in.
Exactly. Way too fast for that. But there are simple things you can do.
Like what? Slowing down, I guess.
That's the big one. Eat or drink cold stuff slowly. Let it warm up a bit in the front of your mouth before you swallow. And if you feel it starting, take the cold thing out of your mouth right away. You can also try pressing your tongue, or even your thumb, against the roof of your mouth.
To warm it up.
Yeah, the warmth helps counteract that cold shock. Drinking something warm or room temperature helps too, for the same reason.
Okay, that all sounds pretty straightforward. And it wasn't just food, right? The sources mentioned other triggers.
Right. It can happen from, like, breathing in really cold air suddenly, or even diving into freezing water. It seems to be that quick temperature drop hitting sensitive nerves, wherever that happens.
All right, let's shift from that physical zap to more of a mental mystery, deja vu.
Yes.
That really strange fleeting feeling that you've lived through this exact moment before, but at the same time, you know you haven't. It feels like a little glitch, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. A brain glitch is a good way to think about it. The name itself, déjà vu, it's just French for already seen. And it's incredibly common. The sources suggest, like, upwards of 97% of people have felt it at least once, and maybe 2/3 of us experience it. you know, somewhat regularly.
Wow, that common. So people have been noticing this for ages, presumably.
Oh, for centuries. Hmm. Way back in 400 AD, St. Augustine wrote about something he called false memories.
Nah.
The actual term déjà vu came much later, 1876, from a guy named Emile Boirac. Then psychologists started using it scientifically in the 1890s. And early on, yeah, there was some thought it might be tied to things like epilepsy.
But that's not the main idea now.
Not for everyday déjà vu, no. The sources indicate recent research points much more towards explanations based on how our perception and memory systems work, or sometimes how they misfire slightly.
So if it's not paranormal, what is the brain doing? What's the theory?
The sort of dominant idea is that it's like two different streams of your awareness kind of bumping into each other. You've got one stream that recognizes the current situation as familiar. That's the déjà vu feeling. But right alongside it, there's another stream that's assessing this feeling and going, wait, no, that's not right. I haven't actually experienced this.
So part of your brain says, I know this. Mm. And another part immediately says, no, you don't.
Pretty much. The feeling of familiarity is labeled the error. And your conscious awareness that it's wrong is the correction.
Interesting.
And one source talked about split perception. The idea there is maybe you process something twice really quickly. Like the first time, maybe you're distracted. You only half register it. Hmm. Then a split second later, you process it fully. But your brain gets confused by the lingering familiarity from that first quick pass and thinks, oh, I must have experienced this ages ago.
Right. It misinterprets the timing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Makes it feel old when it's actually brand new. And right. Who gets it most? That's kind of interesting, too. The studies cited suggest it's more common in younger people, like 15 to 25 seems to be the peak age range.
Any idea why?
Well, one thought mentioned is just that younger people might be less likely to just brush it off, maybe. Less likely to think, oh, I must have just forgotten experiencing something similar. But there are other factors, too.
Like what?
Higher income, higher education levels, people who travel a lot, people who tend to remember their dreams vividly.
Okay. That tracks with maybe more varied experiences or paying more attention to internal states.
Possibly. And then there was one slightly surprising correlation mentioned in one source. People who identify as politically liberal reporting it more often.
Huh. Really? Did they say why?
No. The source just lists it as an observed correlation from some research. They don't really offer an explanation, so we should probably just note it as a reported finding and move on. No interpretation needed from us.
Fair enough.
But it's also really important to separate this everyday kind of déjà vu from when it might be a symptom of something neurological, like temporal lobe epilepsy. The feeling might be similar, but in those cases, it's often linked to actual differences in brain circuits related to memory or emotion.
Right. A different underlying cause. So what other potential causes for the everyday kind do the sources mention?
Well, stress and fatigue come up. Plausible, since they can mess with memory, right?
Sure.
There is also a hypothesis about excess dopamine. This gets some support from studies looking at epilepsy models. And there's this one really wild case study.
Oh, yeah.
Of this man who started having frequent déjà vu episodes when he was taking two specific drugs for the fluamantadine and phenylpropanolamine. Both can affect dopamine.
Mm-hmm.
And when he stopped taking the medication, the déjà vu stopped completely.
Oh, that's pretty direct evidence for a neurochemical link. Potentially.
It really suggests it, yeah. Other ideas include key memory areas like the rhinal cortex and the hippocampus maybe getting slightly out of sync. So you get that feeling of familiarity, but without the actual memory to back it up.
Like one part is saying seen it before the other part has fully processed it.
Yeah. Something like that. Or maybe just a slight delay in information crossing between the two sides of your brain. Mm. Then there's the idea of just like muddled memories. Maybe you saw a place in a movie or a photo.
Right.
And your brain mistakes that visual familiarity for having actually been there. Or even just shifts in attention. You might unconsciously notice something, then consciously focus on it a moment later. And your brain does that time glitch thing again, making the second noticing feel like it happened long before.
It feels like they're getting closer, though. The sources mentioned studies using deep brain stimulation.
Yeah, modern techniques are helping pinpoint the areas involved. They mentioned the entorhinal cortex, the hippocampus, and the amygdala, all critical for memory, familiarity, and emotion processing. Hmm. Stimulating these areas can sometimes induce déjà vu-like feelings.
And it's not just déjà vu, right? There are related feelings.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The sources list a whole family. Déjà entendu is already heard, déjà vécu is already lived through, which sounds more intense, like you feel you know what's coming next.
Huh.
And then the opposite, jamais vu, never seen, where something familiar suddenly feels completely alien.
Okay, so pulling this all together, the consensus from these sources seems to be that déjà vu, for most people, is a fascinating, usually totally harmless quirk of the brain.
Pretty much. An error in perception or memory that your brain catches and corrects really quickly. Not something paranormal or mystical.
Right.
But they do add a sensible caution.
Mm.
If you're experiencing it really often, like multiple times a week, maybe talk to a doctor, a neurologist, just to rule out anything underlying like epilepsy, because it can be a symptom in some cases.
Okay, from that fleeting mental glitch, let's move into something deeper, something that has, well, fascinated humans forever. Dreams.
Ah, dreams.
We all do it every night. And for literally thousands of years, people have been trying to figure out what our dreams mean.
Absolutely. And what's really striking looking at the sources is just how differently cultures approach dream interpretation. It's so deeply tied to their worldview, their history, religion, community, values. It's not one size fits all.
Definitely not. Where do we even start? Maybe with the Western psychological view. Mm-hmm. Freud comes to mind immediately.
Right. Freud is foundational for a lot of Western thought here. He famously called dreams the royal road to the unconscious.
Okay.
He saw them as this crucial outlet for all the stuff we repress, desires, conflicts, and also as a kind of wish fulfillment.
And he had that whole system, right? Okay. The manifest and latent content.
Exactly. He made a key distinction. The manifest content is the dream as you remember it, the story, the images. But the latent content is the hidden, symbolic, often unconscious meaning behind that story.
The stuff your brain doesn't want you to see directly.
That was his idea. He believed the mind uses dream work, a kind of unconscious process, to disguise the latent content to make it less threatening before it reaches consciousness.
Dream work. Okay, what did that involve?
He talked about a few mechanisms. There's displacement, where the strong feelings about one thing get shifted on to something else less important in the dream.
Like getting mad at your boss, but dreaming you're mad at, I don't know, a squirrel.
Kind of, yeah. Then there's condensation, where lots of ideas or people get packed into one single dream image. Symbolization is using symbols, obviously, though Freud was actually cautious about assuming symbols always meant the same thing for everyone.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, he used that famous example of the patient dreaming a fish. The patient thought it was a standard symbol, but Freud traced it back to the patient's mother being a Pisces who didn't like the therapy. Very personal.
Huh.
And finally, secondary elaboration, which is basically your waking mind trying to smooth over the weird dream fragments and make them into a more logical story than they actually were.
So it's like layers of coding and editing happening unconsciously.
That was Freud's take. And his therapy techniques, like free association, just talking about whatever comes to mind from the dream, were ways to try and decode that to get back to the latent meaning. Then you have Carl Jung, also hugely influential, but with a different angle.
Right. Jung. How did he see dreams?
Jung saw dreams as messages from what he called the self, the whole psyche, conscious and unconscious combined. He thought they spoke in a symbolic language, and crucially, that they serve a purpose.
A purpose? Like what?
He talked about dreams having a twofold point of view. They show you the causality, like where a psychological issue comes from, but also the finality, meaning the goal or direction the psyche is trying to move towards.
Okay, so past and future oriented in a way.
In a psychological sense, yes. Mm-hmm. And he really emphasized the relationship between conscious and unconscious as being compensatory or complementary.
Compensatory, meaning dreams try to balance us out.
Exactly. If your conscious mind is too focused on one way of being, the dream might present the opposite to create wholeness. So he really stressed interpreting dreams mainly on the subjective level.
Subjective level, meaning the dream figures are parts of me.
Pretty much. It's your own inner theater. Those people in your dream often represent different aspects of your own personality. He even called our emotional patterns, our complexes, the architects of dreams. And the lysis, the way the dream ends or resolves, often gives clues about what conscious attitude it's trying to compensate for. For Jung, integrating the dream wasn't about picking the conscious view or the unconscious view, but finding a way to hold both what he called the this and that perspective.
Can you give an example of that?
Yeah, he used the example of someone dreaming about a horse jumping over a ravine. For a young man who's maybe too hesitant in life, that dream could be compensatory, pushing him towards courage.
Okay.
But for an older man who's maybe always been bold, perhaps too bold, that same dream might be a warning, suggesting it's time to pull back, be more cautious. The meaning totally depends on the dreamer's conscious situation.
That makes a lot of sense. It's not just the symbol, it's the context.
Precisely.
Okay, so that's Freud and Jung, the big Western psychological figures. But the sources also dive into Eastern and indigenous views, which sound quite different.
Oh, very much so. In many of these traditions, dreams aren't just seen as psychological artifacts. They're often viewed as potentially prophetic, or as sources of spiritual truth, maybe messages from ancestors, spirits, or even divine sources.
So more external or transcendent sources?
Often, yes. For example, in Islamic culture, there's a tradition of classifying dreams. Some might be true visions from God, others deceptive ones from, say, the devil, and others just reflections of daily worries. Consulting scholars or religious texts is common.
Interesting. What about other cultures?
Many African cultures also emphasize dreams as conduits for ancestral wisdom or spiritual connection. The sources mention the Dagara people of Burkina Faso, who apparently rely heavily on dreams for making major life decisions. They see them as direct communication from the spirit world.
Wow. Relying on them for big decisions.
Yeah. And then there's a lovely example from Japan, the tradition of Hatsuyume.
Hatsuyume.
The first dream of the new year. And there are specific things considered really lucky to dream about Mount Fuji, a hawk, and an eggplant, apparently. Those are good omens for the year ahead.
The Fuji, a hawk, and an eggplant.
Okay.
Gotta remember that one.
Huh. And then, you know, in modern Western popular culture, you see a mix, kind of blending some psychological ideas with more accessible things like dream dictionaries for common symbols, teeth falling out, flying, being chased.
Right. You see those online all the time.
Yeah. Often focused on self-help, personal growth, understanding your anxieties or desires.
It feels like globalization must be mixing all this up now too, right? People being exposed to different ideas about dreams.
Definitely. Traditions are blending. New symbols from other cultures might creep into our dreams because we're more exposed to them. It's a dynamic landscape.
So across all these different approaches, psychological, spiritual, cultural, why do you think dream interpretation matters so much to people, according to the sources?
Well, it seems to tap into some fundamental human needs, connecting with community through shared beliefs and stories, seeking personal growth and self-understanding, and also just fostering respect for different ways of seeing the world. Dreams offer a window into that diversity.
If someone listening is thinking, okay, I want to understand my own dreams better, what practical tips did the sources offer?
The most common advice is to keep a dream journal. Write them down as soon as you wake up. Capture as much detail as possible. Over time, you might start seeing patterns.
Okay, journal first.
Yeah. And then seek out knowledge. Learn about different perspectives, psychological, cultural, spiritual. Don't just latch onto the first explanation you find. And importantly, stay open-minded.
Open-minded how?
Well, recognize that a dream might be purely psychological, or it might feel profoundly spiritual, or maybe it's a mix of both. Interpretation isn't really a science. It's more of an art. It takes practice. And like looking in a mirror, sometimes dreams can show you things about yourself, maybe blind spots you weren't aware of.
Wow. Okay, so we've gone from the sharp shock of brain freeze through the weird time warp of deja vu and into the deep symbolic world of dreams. It's amazing how these experiences, things that are so incredibly common, really hold so many layers of scientific puzzle and cultural meaning.
It really is. And I think the takeaway is that while science offers these, you know, fascinating theories about neurons and blood vessels and memory glitches, and cultural traditions give us these rich frameworks for finding meaning, there's still just so much we don't fully grasp about how our own minds work.
Yeah, there's definitely still a sense of mystery there, which leaves you wondering, doesn't it? If our brains can so easily create these fleeting illusions like deja vu, making the new feel old, or make us feel pain in our heads that starts in our mouths, and if entire cultures build meaning around nightly visions that psychology sees as unconscious codes, I mean, how much more is going on just below the surface? What other subtle glitches or maybe even messages are shaping our reality every day in ways we haven't even begun to understand?